just typical thing. You know, that's what it is. It's basketball. It's not a soft sport.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. I forget which number episode it is, but today we're talking about the FIBA World Cup. In only about 12 hours, the Australians are going to play Spain in a huge match, obviously. They win it and they go through to the gold medal game, lose it, and it's a playoff for bronze, a situation the Boomers have found themselves in the past in both the Olympics and the World Championships. And have yet to capitalize, but perhaps this campaign will be different. Today's episode, we're going to be doing a rundown of the last couple of games, the Dominican Republic, France, Czech Republic, the games that have got us this far. And then we're going to do a quick preview of the game against Spain. And then I've got a few talking points from around the cup, around the FIBA World Cup, around the tournament, and then a little bit of talk about the NBL preseason. Very, very briefly. This will be a very quick episode. So if you're on the commute and on the train, perfect time to have a listen, half hour's worth or so. All right, let's jump into it. Let's go with our first game, Australia versus Dominican Republic. Australia, world ranked number 11. Dominican Republic, world ranked number 18. Australia winning this game 82-76. Looking at the major stat discrepancies, it was in the assists, the turnovers, and the offensive rebounds that Australia really made themselves known. Assists, Australia 30-18. Turnovers, 16-11. And then offensive rebounds, Australia 11, Dominican Republic 6. So you add all those up and it's no surprise that Australia won this game. Seemed to coast. This was a game they were well favored to win and ended up doing it in rather banal fashion, but nonetheless did it. Patty Mills was the star of the show. Holy moly. 19 points on 50% from the field, 9 assists, a plus 21. Plus minus. Everyone else hovered around the sort of parity level, and Paddy was plus 21. He was a real aberration in that statistical category. 23% efficiency, just incredible. As I always do with this, let's have a look at the FIBA World Cup from an NBL perspective. So we're going to have a look at the NBL guys and what they've achieved. In this game, it was Paddy, and it was also Chris Golding. 15 points, shot the heck out of it, went to the line 6 times and made all of them. Andrew Bogut, again, listen to this stat line. In under 20 minutes, 8 points, 4 of 11 from the field, 8 rebounds, half of which were offensive, 6 assists and only 1 turnover. Amazing. Nick Kay, again, 3 offensive rebounds to combine with 7 points. They were sort of the leaders. And Sobey got some minutes in this one, got 4 minutes and scored. If we look at the NBL totals, we've always said they're hovering around the 30%. So this game, they got their the NBL contingent got their highest minute percentage of the tournament thus far, 40%. They played 78 of a total 200 minutes, scored 32 points of a total 82, so 39% of the points. Here's what's interesting. They made 36% of the makes, 36% of the field goal makes, on 46% of the field goal attempts. So that number, much higher than it had been earlier in the tournament. Really comes down to Chris Golding. When he's feeling it, he gets the license and that number goes up. Rebounds. The NBL contingent, and this is Bogut and Kay in particular, obviously, grabbed 45% of the total rebounds of the Boomers, 73% of the offensive rebounds. So when you're talking about in a tournament, you want hustle off your bench and guys who do, quote unquote, the little things. Offensive rebounds are the one variable in a basketball game that can change everything because you're getting yourself more shots. The shot clock is designed to make sure that both teams get an equal number of shots. Offensive rebounds are a variable that you can control somewhat to get more field goal attempts. And it's exactly what the NBL contingent especially did. Brilliant play. The NBL got 9 assists of a total 30. That's 30% around about where we want to see it. Turnovers, 38%. Obviously, the lower they can keep that, but well within a healthy range. And then what's funny is they had a plus-minus of -5, and obviously the Boomers won by 6. So the plus-minus not quite working out. Plus-minus, again, is not a great dictator of play. But they won that one. I'm not going to go into too great a detail about what I saw in that game because I think we were very favored to win. The big game was against France. France, who are world-ranked number 3. Australia winning this game 198. Mitch Creek really coming up big in the fourth, got fourth quarter minutes, hit a couple of big plays, a couple of free throws, missed some intentionally at the end, gave up a couple of scores down the other end, only as soon as he'd made a couple of plays, but I really liked him and a bunch of others, but let's go through it. Biggest stat discrepancies in this game, points from turnovers. This has been a problem for the Boomers all the way through their campaign. It didn't change against Dominican Republic, and it didn't change against France. France, let's go to the total. So France had 6 turnovers. The Boomers had 14, so more than double. Off those turnovers, France scored 26 points, and Australia only scored 3 points off turnovers. So the transition game, very limited in this one. The Boomers looked tight, but not a tightness that was fear or whatnot. It was more of a really orchestrated performance from the Boomers. Fast break points, France 18, Boomers 7. Points in the paint, France 46, Australia 38. Bench points, France 37, Boomers only 15. And then 3-point field goals. This was the one, all those stats are in favor of France. This is the one that's in favor of the Boomers, and it really does the difference. France, from the 3-point line, shot 7 of 17. The Boomers at nearly 50%, 13 of 27. So you look there, that is an extra 6 3-pointers. 6 times 3, 6, 12, 18. So an extra 18 points from that 3-point line. You know, they do say it in the analytics that the 3-point shot is the snake oil, the cure-all that can help it. And it certainly saved the Boomers tonight. Looking at the top performers, Paddy Mills, again, he's been MVP of this tournament. He's been MVP of this team. 30 points, 10 of 18 from the field, 3 assists, 7 of 8 free throws, hit some big ones down the stretch, 33.5 minutes. This is one thing to watch with the NBA contingent of the Boomers, high minutes. They've all played in the high 20s or low 30s in pretty much every game, even against the Senegalese and Dominican Republic, where perhaps they could have got a bit of a break. Aaron Baines was, remarkable in this game. 5 of 6 from downtown, 21 points, 7 of 9, 5 rebounds, 27 minutes. Just remarkable. His shot looks like a shot your grandmother would throw up there. It's above the head, it's leaning forward, he steps over the line after he's shot it. It's not pretty, but 5 of 6, you can't complain with the results. And it's been going down all tournament. We'll talk about his shot against Spain coming up. Joe Ingles, amazing. 23 points, 8 of 15, 2 assists. He'd been low in the scoring ranks pretty much all through the tournament until this moment. This was his coming out party with a huge 23 on such high percentages. For the French, definitely worth mentioning, Evan Fournier and DiColo were just fabulous, and it's clearly a strategy of the Boomers to take away the bigs on pick and rolls. They really let the screen E. They let him go and they let him create. They'd rather have that than get damaged by the bigs. But Evan Fournier, 31 points, six rebounds, 4 assists. DiColo, 26 points, 2 assists. Both shot, well, DiColo shot nearly 70% and Fournier just under 50. So two NBA guys. DiColo, I don't know if he's on a roster at the minute, but certainly was at one point. And then Evan Fournier with the magic. So guys to watch. You know, there's been a couple of guys come out and cement themselves as good players, and Evan Fournier looked as good as any as a scorer in this tournament. Let's look at the NBL contingent. Chris Golding didn't have his shot behind him in this game, didn't score. Your best stat totals probably with Andrew Bogut. Best games with Andrew Bogut and Creek. Bogut, 7 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. Mitch Creek, in only 18 minutes, 8 points, 3 of 3 from the field, 3 rebounds, one of which was offensive, and an assist, which I believe came late as well. Let's look at the totals and the percentages of the team. So the NBL guys played a total of 55 minutes. That's 27.5% of the court time. So that was definitely reined in. It had always been in the low 30s to that point. Of the points, they only scored 15% of the points. A little bit of a worry for the Boomers going forward. You need a little bit more points off your bench than that. They made 18% of the makes on 17% of the attempts. Shot 60% of the field as a collective, the NBL contingent, but again, not huge numbers, really NBA and Europe centric in the game against France. Rebounds, however, stayed true. 10 rebounds for the NBL contingent of a total 30, so 33%, right where we want it. Offensive rebounds, they only grabbed 2 of them. The Boomers only grabbed 4 for the game, but that is half of them, and you know, those 2 extra shots can be 4 extra points. We won by 2, so do the math. Assists, NBL 6, total 25, so 24%. Again, considering how many minutes they got, around the average. Turnovers, 36% of the turnovers, 5 of 15. And then blocks, Andrew Berger got 1, and that was the only one for the whole team. So Again, a good performance from the NBL contingent, in particular, Creek and Bogut. Going on to the next one, Australia versus Czech Republic. Australia won this game really handedly. One of their more convincing wins of the tournament, 82-70. Had some big leads early on. The major stat discrepancies that stood out to me are second chance points. Australia got 14 second chance points compared to just 2 for the Czechs, mainly due to Nick Kay. And then the turnovers. Australia, for the first time in the tournament, won the turnover battle against their opponent 11-16. And it's no surprise they won as a result. 5 extra possessions for the Boomers, and look what they did. First double-digit win of consequence. Top players. Paddy Mills, again, you're probably sensing a theme here. 24 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 9 of 15 from the floor, 60%. Just incredible. Chris Golding, I was sort of tossing up on my mind who's had a better tournament coming off of injury, Corey Webster or Chris Golding. The answer is probably Corey Webster, but I think if you even went through and had a look at the minutes on court, you might see where Chris Golding is a real chance to take that position. 4 of 11 from downtown, big shots, big moments, really got back to being the player he was with Melbourne United, not last season with the injury coming off the bench, but the year before. So hopefully he can carry that on. Nick Kay, 7 rebounds, 5 of which were offensive. And Andrew Bogut put the ball in the hole with 10 points. To mention for the Czech Republic, Satoransky's had an incredible tournament all the way through. 13 points, 13 assists, 9 rebounds, nearly a triple-double. Sort of the Joe Ingles stat line that he had against, I forget now, but whoever it was. And then Patrick Auder, I'm probably mispronouncing his name, 21 points. Yeah, serviceable. NBL contingent, let's have a look. I spoke about the top getters. Totals, the NBL guys scored 30 points of a total 82. That's 37%. So that's a very high percentage. They made 39% of the makes off 34% of the attempts. So that's brilliant. They had 34% of the rebounds, 39% of the offensive rebounds. Australia grabbed 18 offensive rebounds. Wow. And the NBL, and Kay had 5 offensive rebounds, and Creek had 2, for a total of 7. So 40% almost of the rebounds for the Boomers. So just amazing. Sorry, I sound like a knob. Australia 13 assists, of which the NBL contingent got 4 for 31%. 25% of the steals, 2 of 8, and then did it all in 35% of the minutes. So you look at that. If they're getting 35% of the minutes, they should be contributing about 35% across the board, and they seem to be up in pretty much every category except for assists. NBL had a plus-minus, a cumulative plus-minus of plus 20, Australian total plus 12. So the NBL guys really had an outing, and that's going to be very, very important in our game, which is the next game against Spain. That game will be played Friday, 13th of September at 6 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, 5:30 in if you're in South Australia, and then 4 o'clock in the afternoon if you're in Perth? Not too sure. It's 2 or 3 hours behind, I can't recall. So let's look at how we got here. Australia, ranked number 11, beat Canada, Senegal, Lithuania, Dominican Republic, France, and Czech Republic. Española, world rank number 2. I think that's Italian. DOS. World ranked DOS. They beat Poland 90-78. Serbia 81-69. And that was kind of the blue ribbon performance of their tournament thus far. Italy 67-60. Another pretty good game of their tournament. Iran. Not the popular song by, I think it's Flocasillos, but Iran the country, 73-65. And then Puerto Rico, they beat 63-73. And Tunisia 101-62. Obviously, that's from their most recent to most distant. This is a good team. I don't know how else to put this. We all recall Rio. They're a team that matches up with us quite well. We have traditional bigs in the sense of Bogut, Baines, Landau to a lesser extent, but certainly matches up well against the likes of Gasol and, both Gasols. So here are my big questions for this game. And I don't know if I have answers to them so much, but these are what I'll be looking for. And after I'm done with the game, this is what I'll be commenting on. Number one, Rudy Fernandez versus Joe Ingles and or, and preferably for me, Mitch Creek. If you've listened to the Trash Talk Basketball podcast and just watched the games, you'll know that Rudy Fernandez does not like to be touched. Got a reputation for being pretty soft. So I think the direction is going to be when he's cutting baseline, really throw your backside into him and knock him around. And I can't wait to see Creek let off the leash at Rudy Fernandez. Two polar opposite players, similar in style, both very athletic, and you know, can really get out and run. But one's tough in Creek, and one doesn't particularly like to go in for that sort of malarkey in Rudy Fernandez. My second biggest question is, who's going to get the bigger minutes out of Jock Landale and Nick Kay? They've been back and forth this entire tournament. Canada, Landale had 22 to Kay's 18. Against Senegal, Kay got more minutes with 20 to 15. Against Lithuania, Landale had 22 compared to Kay's 16. Against the Dominican Republic, Kay had more minutes, 23 to 18. France, it was Landale. Czech Republic, it was Kay. So it's been jumping around. Certainly that rhythm of Landale, Kay, Landale. It's kind of like eeny, meeny, miny, moe. And the buck stops with Landale. So it's going to be interesting to see who gets the most minutes. Can Landale stand up to those bigger bigs, hit some shots, force them outside perhaps? Or are they going to go to Nick Kay to be disruptive defensively and then perhaps sneak in for offensive rebounds like he did so well against pretty much every opposition he's come up against? That's my second big question. Third big question, Aaron Baines. Can he continue to shoot from the outside? 5 of 6 is not you can't replicate that. Or more, if you can, holy moly, but more than likely you can't. So can he nestle into a nice 2 of 4 or a 3 of 6 or just even hit a couple early and stretch that Spanish defense just to totally change their dynamic, maybe make them look elsewhere if Gasol can't, either one of the Gasols can't cover him. So that'll be interesting. That is my third question for the Boomers going against Spain. My fourth question, Matthew Dellavedova. Went 3 of 15 from the field against the Czech Republic and 1 of 4 against France the game before. Can he find a middle ground? Obviously, you don't want him going 3 of 15. You want his attempts around the sort of near double digits. But you've got to strike that balance of scoring for him. He's been a little bit up and down and inconsistent in that area. What is the sweet spot for his scoring for this team? To me, it's just on the cusp of double figures, but it's got to be combined with a couple of three-pointers. He's been pretty good at hitting the timely three, whether it be off a kick-out or a rebound or his own doing, but he's a big part of it. He is really our sort of fourth or fifth scoring option, as crazy as that sounds. So the matchup against him would be very interesting, Dellavedova. My fifth question of the series is, what answer does Spain have for Joe Ingles? Who will match up on him? Will it be Rudy Fernandez? Would be the obvious thing, but will we see Ricky Rubio take him? And kind of, you might see that happen just to avoid that cross match, offense defense. You know, like Joe Ingles is essentially our point guard at times. Will Rubio go to him so that it's kind of tick for tack on that? That's my big question for Joe. He's played great. He's slowly coming into his scoring form later in the tournament. Can he persist with that and push on? That's all I've really got from the Boomers. As I said, this episode is a quick hit for your commute. If you're just desperate to talk Boomers ahead of the big game tonight, and it will be big, as I said, 6 o'clock Eastern time. Definitely, this is the one where you tap everybody on the shoulder, whether they watch basketball or not, and get them into it because it's important. Let's look around now. Wider talking points of the FIBA World Cup. Obviously, United States. Team USA have had a very mediocre performance. They're playing off against Poland for 7th and 8th place. I don't know what time the game is or when it's on. I won't be watching. Really sad result for Team USA. As much as they are a combatant, they are also somewhat the world team. Everyone, you know, a lot of people follow the NBA, and obviously the players are there, and it is nice to see them lose, and you know, everyone likes an underdog, but at the same time, the pressure on those guys to perform is greater than any other country. Win, and it's, you've done the job. Lose, and it's, you're a disgrace. That's tough going, and it's hindering their program, certainly the rosters they take. I've heard a lot of people saying, like, oh, this is not an issue of the players who play. This is an issue for the players who didn't. I actually couldn't disagree with that anymore. Like, of course it's the fault of the players who played. They weren't good enough and they didn't win. It's like saying, there is the line from Ernest, I think it's Einstein, you know, evil prevails when good men do nothing, but these guys took the floor and they lost, you know, learn to deal with it. But it's certainly not the fault of guys who didn't show up. I think to do that is to paint them all with the same brush, that they didn't go because they're spoiled or egotistical. You know, maybe they didn't want to break. Maybe they did want to break after the season. Maybe they see that it doesn't pay and therefore I'm not going to go. Maybe they don't respect or like FIBA and the way it operates. A lot of people haven't. Certainly the national coach of Lithuania is one. Slag off FIBA terribly and then say, but it should be a national obligation to play in their tournament, which essentially doesn't... The FIBA World Cup has as much merit and worth as you or your program places on it. You know, it is just a tournament sprung up. It's not the Olympic Games, and even then the Olympics is just a tournament that sprung up, but it's not an actual... It's not war. It's not something that actually matters. It's a tournament that we choose to place emphasis on, and those players chose not to place emphasis on it, and I don't blame them. I blame the guys who took the floor, if blame is the right word. You know, the USA lost because they didn't play well. To me, of everyone, and if people who probably follow my Twitter account know who I'm going to point the finger at the most, it's probably Greg Popovich. His international record... At the 2002 World Championships, the USA finished sixth. At the 2004 Olympics in Athens, Greece, they finished third. And, of course, at this FIBA World Cup, they're looking at seventh and eighth. That's a poor international record. If you were the coach of Australia and that was your record, would be rather poor, bar the bronze medal, obviously. That would be handy. He has performed poorly at international, and I think there's enough of a background to see that's the case. Why that's the case, I'm not quite sure. I'm going to do some investigation. I'll come back to you. People are using this Team USA loss as an excuse to bash the NBA, which, again, I really don't agree with. The NBA and Team USA are two separate things. Players play in the NBA and then they go to Team USA. It's a totally different uniform. It's a different team. It's a different structure, a different preparation. It would be the equivalent of saying... Roger Federer has lost a ping pong match, therefore his grand slams aren't worth as much. Well, no, they're separate, you know. One is one thing and one is the other. When you put on a Team USA jersey, you're not playing NBA basketball. Yes, it's still 10 feet hoop and it's a round ball, but it's a different team. And you're about your preparation for Team USA. So I don't really understand why people say that... this is a condemnation of the NBA talent or the NBA mindset or the NBA style of play. They're two different beasts. I find it the ultimate hypocrisy when people stand there and go, you know, FIBA's, oh, it's a totally different game. It's a totally different game. But the NBA doesn't work in the FIBA. Well, of course, it's a moot point. You've made, you know, it's fatuous. You know, it's obvious. We know it's different. But yet when the Team USA lose, the first thing everyone says is, you know, the NBA guys are to blame. I just don't get it. The other thing as well is, you know, people say, oh, you know, Team USA have lost, the NBA is not as good. Well, then that would be to discredit all the other NBA players playing on the other teams. Obviously our team, our best performers have been from the NBA. Mills in particular, Bogut, Baines, Dellavedova, Ingles. Our five best players, and essentially almost our starting five, is NBA talent. And then, you know, Tomas Satoransky has had an incredible tournament, plays for the Bulls. Who else? Rudy Gobert was amazing against Team USA. Frank Ntilikina was pretty good. So again, I just don't get it. Maybe I'm missing something. Liam Santamaria put up an interesting tweet the other day. If you're not following him, I think it's Liam, at Liam underscore Santa. Who would you rather have, Andrew Gaze or Patty Mills from this tournament? Great case for both. But for me, the answer is Patty Mills. Andrew Gaze is an incredible scorer. I think I have Mills for a couple of reasons. One, I think he's just a little bit more athletic and a little bit more capable defensively. I don't think he particularly showed it in the last couple of games, certainly not against France. But he's a more athletic, dynamic defender and can do a little bit more. And then I just also think he's a bigger shot maker. And I think I tweeted this out. I said, you know, I think he's a bigger clutch shot maker, and that's been honed by the world class incredible grind of the NBA. So I'd take Mills for that reason. I think Gaze, a lot of the reasons you'd say, oh, I have Gaze because, you know, he's a number second two scorer in the Olympic Games behind Oscar Schmidt. Great cumulative stats, but they don't mean as much game to game, and he's had some incredible tournaments. As I said, really tough to do it, to pick two. But for me, I'm taking Patty Mills. I think he's been absolutely, as I wouldn't say perfection, but as close to basketball perfection as I've seen in this tournament. He shoots with just absolute beauty. The other thing I want to talk about is there's been a lot of hubbub and a lot of criticism of the lack of coverage of the Boomers. Obviously, in print, some of the games have been played over midnight and printing presses. Some print as early as 9 or 10 o'clock, others as late as midnight. Some games have gone over that. They've flowed over and haven't been able to go into print. I even think the digital coverage has been poor, 3 or 4 out of 10, maybe worse. It's a real missed opportunity. At this point, the coverage or lack of has been so poor, it almost feels like it's contrived or combative, where it's purposeful, where this is something people would take an interest in. Even if I think casual fans, I think a grandmother sitting somewhere would pick up the paper and say, oh wow, Australia's playing against the world, and I think that actually jumps off print and is a would be an interesting read for people, even if they're not into basketball. So I think it's a deliberate attempt to maybe suffocate the sport and bump up the codes that have a better reputation with the papers or have signed longer deals. Don't quite know the extent of that or whether that's fair or not, but it certainly seems that way. I think also the other problem is, I don't know how much trouble, I hope I don't get any trouble for this, but basketball is an incredibly rare sport. 12 players from our entire country represent the team, and 12 players from the United States, and 12 players from all these countries. The NBA, the AFL was pumping its chest that, oh, we've got 74 players in the AFL this year. I believe it's 74 thereabouts, which is around about the 10% mark of players. And they were saying that's our best ever ratio of Indigenous players, which is fantastic. It's about the same ratio as the Boomers. But the difference is there's not 40 spots on each team. There's 12 in the entire country. And one is occupied by a First Nations person, and he's our best player. I think there's been a real narrative missed here for the papers of Patty Mills is an Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander who's our best player against the world. And we're right now sitting in the fourth position or thereabouts, attempting to go for gold. What is not to love about this story? What is not generic about this story? What is not fit for Australian papers about that? It's been really upsetting. But maybe it's got something to do with it. Maybe it doesn't. Just putting it out there. Guys, that's all I've really got. I will remind you all, game tonight, 6 o'clock. Tell everybody. If you're looking for more, if you just want to get your absolute Boomers fix on before this game, that's understandable. The best places to go, in my opinion, are Body Nodge, who comes on the podcast regularly, BOTINAGY.com. Definitely jump on there. Bunch of articles about, I'm sure he'll do a preview about this game and past games as well. And then obviously over at NBL.com.au, you've got Liam Sands-Maria and Tom Hirsch. They're great reads. I'm sure they'll have preview of this Spain game and games in the past. Other stuff going on in the NBL. I've kind of lost touch with the preseason games. Obviously, the FIBA World Cup just has my attention, along with most people's. But there are a lot of preseason games going on. So once this tournament is over, hey, jump out and buy a ticket. They're probably 10, 20 quid, and you'll have a lot of fun with that. Obviously, a couple of teams are missing their best players. But what are you going to do? Guys, thanks very much for that. Really enjoy the game tonight, and I hope you enjoyed this for what it was worth, and I will see you next week.